listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Today is Thursday, November 14th, and we're moving forward. Beautiful day in LA, like I always say, because it's always beautiful here, and that's why people move here, and that's why it's expensive to live here, because everybody wants to live here. So, but it's worth it. You know, California, there's nothing like it, and many people around the world are just dreaming of coming here. So if you live here, you're fortunate. If you don't, we'll tell you more about it later. Today I'm joined in the studio by a very special guest. Her name is Lena Su. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you for coming. And you're a filmmaker, and you just came out with a movie, a feature film. And we're going to talk about that quite a bit to promote it. I see you're going to be showing at a local theater here.
And
that's pretty cool, you know, because usually we get like short filmmakers and they don't get to be in the theaters, you know, it's just in festivals and stuff, right?
That makes sense. Yeah. My feature film, Meeting You, Meeting Me, it's my first. And so it's very exciting and a different sort of situation that I'm experiencing. But we'll be at the Lemley NoHo 7 from November 15th through the 21st. Uh-huh. For 4 screenings a day. And so I hope you all come out. Yeah.
Well, you can't miss it now. You guys have no excuse to miss it.
Exactly.
It's going to be on from November 15th through the 21st. So starting tomorrow.
Yes, it's tomorrow. And actually after the 7:30 PM show on 4 of the nights, we'll have special Q&As with a special guest moderators.
Oh.
So, that'll be November 15th, 16th, 17th, and the 20th.
That'll be amazing.
Yeah, we're very excited about
that. Awesome. And you've made some short films before that too, right?
I did, yeah. They're most notably, I guess, I made one called So Effing Happy For You, which was on Short of the Week. I actually made that during my grad school years. And it wasn't actually a school project, but it was one of those things where I was saying, I just have to keep practicing to see if I know how to do this or if I, you know, can do this. And so I did that over one summer. And I just grabbed, you know, people that I'd gone to school with, but also a lot of people who were already out in the world and working. And so it really made me step up my game. And I think that kind of helped me forward. And then that actually led to my next short later, right after I'd graduated, called Good Face.
Okay. So we'll talk about those later and everything. We just want to find out a little bit about you and everything, your background, and, you know, that's where we get a good picture of you, and then we'll see why you made the films and why you made them the way you did, you know. So that's amazing. So do you live in L.A.?
I have lived in L.A. for a while, since my grad school years, actually. But recently, since the pandemic, I've been between Korea and L.A. a lot.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Since the pandemic.
Yeah, so I was on a writing job. I actually just sold a pitch to HBO Max at the time. Uh-huh. And so we were writing, me and a co-writer of that particular project, we were co-writing the pilot. And since we couldn't meet anyone because the world kind of shut down, I was like, you know what, I'll go write from Korea a little bit since my family is there.
Mm-hmm.
And what was supposed to be a month and a half became a year and a half.
Yeah.
So it was actually lovely for me to be able to spend time with my family, but also because I've been wanting to work both here and there. And so a lot of the projects since then have been, a lot of jobs and projects have been kind of co-production situations, global projects.
I see. Cool. So you were born, obviously, to Korean parents. Are both your parents Korean?
They are. Both of them are Korean. Mm-hmm. I was born in the U.S.
You were born here?
Yes.
Where in the U.S.?
Syracuse, New York.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Were they, did they immigrate or were they first generation?
They immigrated. Well, so they actually came from my dad's PhD. So it was the first time they'd ever left the country. And so they came after they were married to Syracuse, New York. And they were there for a number of years while I was born. And then my sister was born. And then when he finished his degree, we all moved to Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. Was he a professor?
Yes, he is a professor. So that was his first professor job in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
So we were there for, I think, about 5 or 6 years, maybe more, in Wisconsin. And I had another sister that was born there. And then I think at that point, my parents had been in the U.S., I think a little over 10 years. And they were like, okay, well, we miss Korea. We're going to go back. So when I was 9 years old and I had two sisters, we all moved back to Korea. And so
that's interesting. So you had part of your childhood here, part of your childhood in Korea.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's pretty good. I know sometimes it's hard, though, because you have to leave your friends behind when you move, right?
It was very hard at the beginning.
For a child, yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely pretty resistant at the beginning. I was really? Like, I don't want to go. Yeah. My friends are all here. This is not my ideal image of what my life is going to be like. But then, of course, when I moved over there, I started making friends. And I still missed my friends back in the U.S. a lot, and I was begging my parents to send me back, let's all move back, all of these things. But I think after about 2 or so years, my mom actually kind of gave me an ultimatum, because I had kind of prepared a speech asking to send me back. And you know, I was 11 or 12 at the time, saying, I can go back alone, I can have a life there. And wow. My mom was basically like, no, if you think of such crazy things again, she didn't say those words, but right. Essentially telling me that if I asked of such a thing again, that we would, she would not let me even speak with my American friends.
Wow.
And so that actually opened up Korea to me in a way where I was like, yeah. Oh, I have to adjust so that I can continue to have.
Yeah, so you don't have a choice now.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was wonderful, actually.
Yeah, wow. I know, but it sounds pretty traumatic also, because you miss your friends. I mean,
yes.
I know what it's like, you know, because, well, I came here on my own at 16, but it wasn't because my parents brought me here. I just came here because I wanted to come here.
Mm.
But still, I left many friends behind, and that was, for many years, it was very difficult because, you know, your friends from when you're like a young teenager and stuff, mm-hmm. they stay with you, you
yes,
know, they help,
sure.
they help you form your personality, your life and things like that, you know?
Yeah, I definitely missed my friends. We had in Wisconsin, my,
uh-huh.
my little elementary school posse, we had created a little club of our own called, because we were really into Grease at the time,
uh-huh.
and so it was our version of the Pink Ladies in a way. So it, I was, you know, I very much missed them and wanted to go back to them. And I think the other thing was, you know, it was a huge culture shock in a way too, because the nice. The school is very different, the way the school system is runs, or the way that the children interact with each other in Korea versus
right.
the U.S., where, you know, I pretty much went from a neighborhood where there were. I was the only Korean child, to a school where it was 100%, you know, Korean children at a public
right.
school. And so it was, even the language, I was able to speak it because my parents always spoke to us and made us speak to them in Korean. In
yeah,
America.
That's what I was going to ask, because usually your first language is what you hear at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you're raised in the United States, if your parents speak Korean, you speak Korean first before you learn English, right?
Yes,
yeah.
It's true.
Because that's what they speak to you.
Exactly.
And for example, I'm from Israel, so I was born speaking Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
but I married an American woman, so we spoke English at home, so my kids don't know Hebrew, you know?
Oh, yeah. Because
I never bothered to teach them. But some parents actually, the one parent speaks to them in one language
mm-hmm.
and the other in another language, and then they learn both. But to me, it seemed kind of like awkward to do, you know,
right.
so.
Mixing languages in the home, it is awkward. I think when we were little, when I was little in the U.S. before moving to Korea, because we were only speaking English in school,
mm-hmm.
My parents were pretty adamant about us being able to speak both languages, and so they were like,
right.
"You get plenty of English in school,
uh-huh.
so you children must speak Korean at home, and that's the only way you learn." I mean, it was easier, of course, because my parents also spoke Korean between themselves, and
right,
and
exactly.
Korean is more comfortable for both of them to us, and so they.
Right.
They were basically like, we're not going to respond to you if you speak to us in English.
Uh-huh.
You must speak Korean to us at least so that you learn.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
But then the thing is, when we moved to Korea, they were like, okay, now you can speak whatever you want at home because you'll definitely
yeah.
speak enough Korean everywhere, and we
exactly.
don't want you to forget your English. You have to maintain that.
Yeah.
But at that point, we were already very comfortable speaking Korean to my parents.
Right.
So we continued to speak Korean mostly at home, but between me and my sisters, because we would speak English between each other as even younger children in the U.S., it became kind of a mix of, of English and Korean.
Yeah, that's what I see around us too. You know, it's like the kids start speaking English to themselves and sometimes to their parents too. You know, it just because that's what happens in school later. You know,
when
you leave the house, you start going to school and all that stuff. So your world opens up to you and you start speaking different,
and, you know, the language. And then I had a brother who was actually born after we moved to Korea. And so he's never had that kind of upbringing in the U.S. And therefore, with him, we're pretty much only speaking Korean.
Right.
But he's very comfortable with hearing English because on and off, he'll be hearing it at home. And so then later, we all came to the U.S. for a little bit, but he was able to adjust a little bit quicker because it's easier on his ears because he's been listening to it a fair amount.
Yeah. Very interesting. So your father came out here for his PhD. Mm-hmm. What did he want to teach?
He is a business management professor.
Oh, I see.
Well, very different from me.
Yeah. So was he at college age when he moved out here or later on in his life?
It was. He must have been late 20s.
Okay.
I think, because he, as I mentioned, my parents both never left the country until after they were married. That was the first time when they came to the U.S. for his degree. So I think their first time on a plane, they said, was their honeymoon, and they were just flying from Seoul to another Korean island, which is just, I can't remember, like an hour or less of a flight. So this was a huge flight from Korea to the U.S. Later on.
So I imagine that they were probably expecting quite a bit from you guys as far as education and things like that, right? Did you go to college?
Yes, yes.
Where did you go?
I went to NYU. I studied dramatic writing.
I see. So that's after you came back from Korea, right?
Yes. So moved to Korea when I was 9, and then we actually came back to the U.S. when I was 15 for my dad's sabbatical. And so we were only supposed to be in the U.S. for a year and then all go back together. This time I prepared an even better speech of why I should stay. It's funny because when I was living in Korea those 6 years as a child until 15, by the end of it, I actually was like, oh, I'm completely adjusted here. I'll probably live here for the rest of my life in Korea. But then, of course, when we came back for a year and we moved to a different area, but still, you know, I was making friends and I had these big dreams of wanting to be a writer and go into film and things like that. And so I don't know that I said those words exactly, but I definitely prepared of like how I'll study hard and I'll work hard. And so at that point, when they were having to go back, they were like, okay, we'll think about it for a second. And took them a few weeks. But then at the end of it, they said, okay, if you really think that you can do all as you say, then we'll see how we can make it work. And so then for the rest of high school, I had still about 2.5 years left of high school. So I stayed with different friends' families.
Oh, I see. Okay. And they moved back again.
Yeah. And so they moved back.
Wow. What was that like? You lived with other kids' parents? Families?
Yes. Yeah. It was actually very interesting. I ended up staying with three different families throughout the rest of my high school because my parents basically left in the middle of 10th grade because that was the calendar year. So the second half of 10th grade, I stayed with one friend's family. And then for 11th grade, I stayed with another friend's family. And for 12th grade, I stayed with actually not my friend's family, but my younger sister. She had gone back with the family, but one of her friends, their family, I'd come to know through my sister. And they were like, oh, please stay with us. And
really? That's amazing.
Yeah. And they were so, so lovely, too. So I'm very grateful for these families who I was able to. And I think I learned also a lot about how, you know, we talk about how different people, different characters have their own personalities and characteristics. But I was realizing even the family unit is in itself has a different, its own personality. I would say, you know, there are obviously these universal values of like love between, you know, parents and their children and siblings and all the things that happen within families. And so a lot of it translates in some ways, but also the way in which you interact with your families within each family is also different.
Yeah, so you were like a fly on the wall. You could actually
in
observe,
some ways, yeah. I had to kind
what
of
was happening.
Become part of that unit in a different way, but is it a little bit of a chameleon lifestyle.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. You must have missed your parents, though, and everything. You were
still
young.
Yes, I missed them terribly, and my siblings. I remember after the first few months, actually, because my brother was quite young. He and I are about 10 years difference, and so I remember being on the phone with him once, and he was small, and I remember asking about his day and things like that, and I started to cry, so I had to hang up because I didn't want this little boy to know that his older sister was crying, and I was suddenly having this realization that I wouldn't really see him grow up in the same way of you know, living day to day together.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely miss them. I went back at least once or twice a year, usually once a year if I was somehow lucky or there's something going on, maybe both summer and winter, but usually it was once a year.
I see. And this time around, where were you living now? In Syracuse?
No. You mean in...
That, like when they left you the second time, when you stayed with your friends.
That was actually in Minnesota.
In Minnesota, okay,
yes.
Wow.
So
you've been like all over the place pretty much. Okay.
Exactly.
So Wisconsin once and then Minnesota. So you pretty much grew up with snow and cold weather.
Yes.
And that kind of stuff, right?
Definitely. LA was a very new transition for me because after Minnesota, since I went to college in New York, also a very cold place. So I kind of put my big pockets of upbringing is New York generally, because New York City and also New York upstate and then the Midwest and also Korea.
Right.
And Korea also gets quite cold in the winter. So.
Oh, it does?
Yes. Okay. It definitely has the clear four seasons, and which I love.
Yeah.
All these places have very cold winters.
That's amazing. So you have a connection to the Midwest and everything?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, the Midwest section of my life, the New York section of my life, the Korea section of my life. I love it.
Exactly. You've been to different places. Mm-hmm. I know. That's when I was young, we moved around quite a bit as well. And, so talking about like leaving friends behind and everything, I went through it several times, you know, so it was kind of tough. But, you know, I mean, I've lived, I also lived in Vegas. I lived in South Africa. I lived here. So I've been in different places too, and it adds to your personality somehow.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you pick up different things in different cultures, and you know, and obviously you were independent early on. You know, if you felt you could stay here on your own, you know,
that's very silly.
But you have to be independent. I mean, not everybody can do that. You know, at 10th grade, and
it's true.
But you knew what you wanted.
I suppose. I mean, it's interesting because I'm very close with my family as well, and so I love spending time with them, being with them a lot of the time. But I think at the same time, it has always been clear to me that I wanted to go a certain path, and so when meaning go to write and direct and things like that, and I think because my earlier years had been formed here, I think I'd started to form that sort of mindset of like, oh, this is where I would end up doing these things. And I was always writing short stories and children's stories as a child, and then started to write, you know, started novels that I never finished as a child. And, and I think because I had started my writing in Korean, in English at that time, that's kind of what I was thinking would continue to happen.
Yeah.
But then, as I said, when I moved to Korea in my young teen years, I did also, it was a little bit of a learning curve, but I definitely, because I like to read, and I started to read a little bit more and more, and started to write as well in Korean. And so I think by the end of that period, I was like, okay, well, let's try to chart the path here because I do love this place too. Life circumstances had it that we came back, and then I think I just basically end up falling in love with all the places that I go.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, actually, in college, I did a study abroad program in Italy for a semester, so I was there for 6 months, and then I took a leave of absence and I went to Cambodia for 6 months, and
really?
So those were very different places.
But yeah,
both places, after a little while, I was like, oh, I could live here.
Yeah. I know that happens. Every time I go on vacation, I'm like, yeah, I could live here. You know, everywhere you go, you want to live there, you know, because, but sometimes you just see it from a tourist perspective. Mm-hmm. You don't realize what it takes to really live there.
Absolutely.
And yes. It's different, you know. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so after high school, you decided you're going to go to college. How did you decide on what college to go to?
Well, I mean, NYU does obviously have an amazing program in terms of film and writing. At that time, I didn't know that I would direct. I was just thinking about writing. And so,
but you did know you wanted to go into film, though, right?
Yeah, so I wanted to be a screenwriter.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and so I, at the age of 12, I think I was like, I'm going to be a screenwriter.
Wow.
Yes, it's because throughout, so that whole period, I think between the age of 10 and 18, when I went to college, I had actually already written and directed several plays, maybe like 15 or so short plays.
You're kidding, wow.
No, it's because I think that was just my outlet. And yeah. So I had been doing that, and I didn't know how to work a camera very well or anything. Like, I actually did try once. I failed miserably when I was 13 or something. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to keep putting up plays. And at the time, I didn't even know that that was directing. I thought I was just telling everybody, like, oh, say the line this way, you know, or turn on the music here, or move around this way. And but I had no idea that was called directing. And I just was writing things and wanting to see them made. And so then college, back to your original question on that, mm-hmm. is I never even dreamed that I would be able to go to NYU, so I wasn't going to apply. So I applied to a ton of other programs as well that had some sort of like film writing, creative writing type programs. And I think it was just a couple of weeks before the deadline, a friend of mine who was actually applying to med school, she just loved the fact that I was always writing and doing this thing. And she was like, oh, somehow she had heard that NYU was a good school for that. And was uh-huh. like, so you're applying to NYU? And I was like, oh, no, of course not. And she's like, why? And so I ended up looking up the requirements, and I realized, you know, for the regular application, I'd already finished all my common application stuff. So that was fine. But for the portfolio portion, it just said 25 pages of three different samples of writing. And I was like, oh, well, I have that. So yeah. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to throw it in, forget about it, which I did. And so I didn't tell anybody. That med school applying friend was the only one who really knew that I was applying. Not even my parents knew.
Really?
No.
Oh, wow.
This is how much I didn't think that it would happen.
Wow.
And so then when I did get in, then I told them. And, you know, they were, of course, very elated, and as was I, mm-hmm. and and that's how that came about.
Yeah, so you moved to New York, mm-hmm. and what was that like for you? Did you like it right away?
I loved it. Yeah, it was also, I think it was one of the biggest culture shocks of my life, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, I obviously the one from Wisconsin to Korea was a huge one too at age 9, but when I moved from the Midwest to New York City at age 18, I think it was pretty much on par with how big of a culture shock it was. I think with yeah. even all of my different experiences that I'd had living in different countries, it was, all of it was still so different and much more, I don't know, maybe sheltered in a way than what I started to experience when I moved to New York. And I was going to school with all of these people from all over, not just the U.S., but all over the world, with such different experiences and backgrounds, and it was truly a melting pot, which I think is a word that I also learned at that period. And I think that college period was a huge learning curve, growth period of my life as well. I say New York is kind of the city that raised the adult me.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's usually college years. That's when
true.
It happens. Your adult starts to
exactly.
develop and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you took film in school, and did you still want to stay in writing, or did you discover other things you could do in film?
Definitely writing. So NYU, it was the dramatic writing program, so it wasn't the film production program.
Oh, okay.
So I did dramatic writing, which means that in our first year, I don't know what the program is exactly like now, but the first year when I was there, for sure, playwriting and screenwriting, we had to learn both and do both during our freshman year, and then you could kind of choose a path afterwards between mm-hmm. those two, or TV writing was still pretty new at the time, yeah. And so you could choose between the three of those, and I chose screenwriting. So I was writing a lot and workshopping them with all of my peers in school. And but a lot of my friends ended up being students in the film production program because in my dorm floor, actually, who is also still my best friend, she was in the film production program, and another best friend of mine across the hall was also a film production program. And you know, they weren't my best friends then when we just all had moved into the dorms together, but they continue to be some of my closest friends to this day. And so through them, my circle grew in that arena, and I was helping them make their school projects, and I was in their school projects, and I was helping produce their thesis films. And I think that's, of course, it might have influenced how later I was thinking about, oh, maybe should I do this as well?
Right.
But it was several years after I was out of college.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, in college, did you make a film? I mean, did you like with somebody? I mean, usually it's like, well, I don't know. I guess usually people that go into directing and producing and stuff, they make films. But as a writer, did you also have to make a film?
I didn't make one in school. Not that I remember. Did I make one? No, I don't think I made my own. I think I was just writing a lot.
Right.
There was a kind of a practical filmmaking course that writers had to take in the major, but I don't know why, but I don't remember taking that course. But I was helping, as I said, a lot of other students with their film projects.
Right.
And actually, when I went to Cambodia, I did end up making a short documentary film there that I'd started with one of my good friends. So there was that, but it wasn't really a school thing.
I see.
And then, yeah, like I said, it was years later after.
Okay. So what happened right after school? What did you decide to do with yourself then?
Oh my God! I was desperate for a job, and
but you knew you wanted to work in film, right?
I mean, definitely, I did. But I was working a lot of odd jobs. Basically, I was trying to continue writing and trying to see how I could push those things forward. But because I didn't really know how to go about that in so many ways, you know, I was maybe looking at different competitions, screenwriting competitions, or, you know, I had done some internships and trying to look into that. But it wasn't really, those weren't really creative jobs in any way, in the way that I wanted to be able to write. I was a receptionist in a doctor's office. I was a waitress. I was a barista.
Gotta get a day job.
Yeah, exactly. So did a lot of those things in between. And then I think at some point, and I also produced my college best friend's first feature out of college as well.
I
so
see.
There was
okay.
that, actually.
That's nice.
So that was a few, maybe just 2 or 3 years out of college that we did that. But again, you know, I was still working a lot of other odd jobs that wasn't film-related.
And you stayed in New York during that time, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then, what came first? Did you decide to move out of New York? At what point did that happen?
That was maybe about 5 years after college, where I was, you know, at that point I'd been in New York City for almost a decade, and I hadn't figured out how to really get my career off the ground in terms of writing. And so I was like, I have to change things up in some way. And so I even thought about Korea for a second at that time, but and then I started thinking about grad schools generally, and my friend had also mentioned, since I was trying to push a screenplay around that I had written and try to see how to get that made, she was like, well, have you thought about directing? And I was like, no, of course I can't do that. And but then I feel like this is kind of the trajectory of me always being like, no, of course not. And then kind of it plants a seed in my mind, and then I start to think about it. So then I ended up directing a scene from a feature that I had written, just to see if it was something that was of interest to me, if I could, what it might all be about. And I asked a lot of my friends that I had come out of school with, who were from out of the film production program. And so I, you know, made essentially a short film based on a short scene from a feature. And then again, I wasn't sure what to do. And then I started thinking about grad schools, and realized USC out here had a summer deadline. And so I was like, maybe I'll just apply quickly to this now. So if I want to look at more grad school deadlines later in the winter, mm-hmm. I'll have material ready. So I ended up using that short scene that I had shot with my friends as my visual sample. So luckily I already had that. I wrote an essay and all of that stuff and threw it in. Again, forgot about it because I was like, I just had to figure out my life. And a few months later, I suddenly got the acceptance letter and I was like, okay, I'm moving to LA.
Wow. So you got accepted to USC.
Yes.
And that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that was also very exciting. At the time, I just never thought that was in the cards. And
really?
So I moved out here to LA and also was very blessed to meet a lot of amazing friends in the program that we all went in together and kind of quickly bonded and became family. And again, a lot of those people are also my close friends right now.
Right.
So
so you joined the film program here at USC.
Yes.
And then you started learning directing, mm-hmm. producing, things like that as well.
Yeah, so USC does a very good job in terms of trying to give you a rounded education in all of the different departments. And so directing, of course, but also sound and also writing courses, of course, and camera. And so you have to do everything, all the roles, and dabble in everything, at least for the first year. And then from there on, you can focus on different things, maybe different areas that you also just want to strengthen yourself in and learn more, regardless if that's the area you're going to go into.
Right.
So for me, I was, thinking about directing and but at the same time, I was also realizing the craft of all of these other departments that I just hadn't realized, like all that goes into it.
Yeah.
And so I think I tried to take some more classes and other things. I think, for example, sound was one of the things where it just blew my mind what it does for a movie. And we have some of the most amazing sound professors. Also took some more camera classes, things like that. I could never be a DP. I bow down to them. But it was good to take those classes just to know what goes into it and have at least a little bit of knowledge to be able to communicate with your DP about.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you might want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you need to know the complete picture if you're going to make a film,
mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
That's true. So so I assume you had to make like a student film, right?
Yes.
While you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that go? Tell us about that. Did you write it? You wrote the film?
Yes. So there, I didn't do a thesis film for my finishing project. There are a few routes that you can take, but the first year you have to make a lot of short films. And that was a huge learning curve for me as well. I think at the beginning I was like, those were ones that I had written and I was directing these shorts that I had written. And I think the first semester there was a point where I was like, maybe I can't do this. This is not for me. I can't, and I think, but by the end of the first semester, because we have to make a few shorts, I think I really just dug in and I was like, okay, let's see how to get this, to really try to use these tools that they've taught us how to use. And I think that was the point where I was like, maybe I can, because it turned out decently for a first semester film. And then I was like, you know what, I just have to keep practicing.
Right.
And that's when I started to think about, I'm just going to direct something over a course of the summer. And I want to try directing something that I hadn't written. And so I reached out to different writer friends to see if they or their writer friends might have a 10-minute short script that I might be able to direct over a summer. And that's actually how I became connected with somebody else who is now a very good friend of mine. And we co-write a lot of stuff as well, because her script came to me through a mutual friend. And that was the short that became So Effing Happy For You, which I mentioned is on Short of the Week. In that one, it was supposed to be a practice run, but people started to pay attention and started to get us meetings and things like that. And so it was very exciting.
Now, did you realize, it's pretty, for the lack of a better word, ballsy to name a film with the F word in it.
Oh.
Right. I mean, did you think about that at all? Is it gonna get in the way of the film, or is it gonna actually get more attention?
I think it might have gotten more attention. It just felt right for this particular film. I mean, I can't take credit also because I didn't title the film. I can't remember actually what the original title was when the script came to me. But it's about aspiring stand-up comedians in L.A.
Okay.
Also a friendship story, actually, also two women aspiring comedians. But anyways, it was actually in post where we were like, oh, let's give it a different title. Again, I can't remember what the original one was.
Uh-huh.
But as we were discussing it, me and the writer of that, Helen, and then some of our other friends that we were just hanging out with, and another friend of ours actually ended up just throwing that out, and we're like, that's it.
Wow, that's pretty cool. But like I said, it takes a little bit of courage, I think, to name a film with the F word, you know, because some people get offended, you know, and things like that. But I guess sometimes you just have to use it.
I suppose so. Yeah. I didn't imagine that ever happening to a film that I would make, but it did, and it seems to have worked for us.
So. Yeah. How long was this film?
That one was, I think the runtime is 15 minutes. 14,
I see.
15 minutes, yeah.
And did you run it through the festival circuit and things like that?
I didn't really. It did end up going to a couple of festivals, but again, I mean, I was a student at that point in time, and
right.
Festivals cost so much money to apply to, and so I think I hadn't really even thought about it, about putting it through a bunch of festivals, but there were a few where I don't know, somehow I'd heard about it. I'd heard about Short of the Week because being in school, maybe one of my professors had mentioned it to the class of like, oh, since you guys are all making shorts, look at this website. It's basically a curated platform of shorts. And I remember, again, I had not too much exposure to short films prior. So as I'd been trying to figure out what a short film is, the language of short films, I had been looking on that platform and was very impressed with everything on there.
Right.
So later when I made my own, I think that was one that kind of occurred to me. Oh, I should apply to see if I can get it on there. And it was similar for, it was at New Filmmakers LA, which is also a monthly LA film festival, which I'd heard about and I thought was very cool. So I was like, oh, you know what, I'll throw it in there as well. So there was just a very small handful that I had somehow heard about or thought maybe it was worth putting it in. And, a few I was rejected, the film was rejected, but and then a few we got in. And so, I can't really say that I did the circuit with them, but a few that it did end up having several screenings because of these
great
opportunities.
And you made a few more short films after that?
I did.
Right?
So Good Face is the other one that's kind of the one that I is very near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
That one was actually produced by a company that is no longer in existence. That was called New Form. And it was the digital entertainment company that it was the time when web series was really coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friend Helen and I, who had, you know, we'd made So Effing Happy for You.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, oh, you know, we actually really enjoy working together. Maybe we should try co-writing a couple things as well. Even though we also write separately, there's a certain synergy to us working together. And so we'd started bullet pointing a bunch of ideas that maybe from ideas from my life, ideas from her life, just random ideas that we had. And then after we had graduated, a friend of ours who was working at that company, New Form, at the time that made web series, he was like, you know what, they're looking for one more project to produce. Do you want to pitch that one idea to them that we'd been talking about over drinks once? And we're like, sure. And so then they ended up buying the pitch, and essentially we were able to produce that. Helen and I co-wrote the web pilot, and I directed it, and then it was put out on, you know, through their channels, and they were trying to make it as a web series, but then web series were kind of dwindling out after that, and so then they were like, let's develop it as a half hour.
Mm.
So then we ended up pitching it around as a half hour, which is how, you know, we started to have more producers get involved. And at the time, Sony came involved. And then we pitched it to, I think, 11, 12 different platforms.
Oh, wow.
And ended up selling that pitch to HBO Max. It was a few months before they had launched. And so then we started developing it with them and wrote a pilot with them. So, yeah, it was, I mean, I talk about it in a very condensed way, but it mm-hmm. was over the course of a longer period of time.
I see. Okay. And then meeting you, meeting me came
yes.
along, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. How did that come about for you?
Yeah, meeting you, meeting me, the feature is, since I had made these shorts, right, SOFing Happy For You and Good Face and some others, and I was kind of itching to make something longer now. I was like, I really want to make a feature, but it's still very hard to get somebody to give you the money to do that, to give you the opportunity. And so I was like, I have so many talented people around me and, you know, I can write it. And I grabbed these two actresses that I already knew, and I knew that they could pull it off. And I asked them separately. They didn't know each other at the time. And I asked them if they would partake with me on this journey to make a feature. And
uh-huh.
luckily they said yes. And other people that I'd come out of grad school with, a friend who was producing, you know, every other short film in school, you know, we all graduated. And I was like, do you want to produce my feature? And luckily she also said yes. Another friend who was an amazing DP, in school, she's also doing incredible things right now. So at the time when we were right out of college, I was like, please work with me and shoot my movie.
Yeah.
So it kind of started in a very scrappy way like that. And so I wrote something about a story of friendship. It's two women from very different backgrounds who both really need a friend in this moment. And I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah.
and they meet by chance, and a friendship evolves over the course of a day. So it was mostly one location. It was all supposed to be over one day, as I mentioned. And I really fashioned these characters with the energy of these two actresses in mind, since I knew them. And so obviously the characters are very fictional characters, but
right.
It was.
So you found the actors before you wrote the film?
Yes, I
really?
Did.
Really?
Yes, yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So Annika Foster, who plays Sav in the film, she had already been in a few shorts of mine prior, and I loved working with her, and mm-hmm. we had just gotten coffee around the time that I was thinking, you know what, I just have to make a feature no matter how I do it. And so she was on my mind again, and I reached out to her after that coffee, maybe you know, a week or two later, and I was like, let's meet up again. And I said, I think I'm going to make a feature. Do you want to be my lead? And she was like, yes, of course. and then Sam Yim, who plays Simone in the film, I had not worked with her on a film yet, but she had actually auditioned for a completely other project of mine, maybe the year prior. And she, you know, she's Korean American, and I was always looking for different Korean American actors that I might be able to work with in LA. And so she actually ended up reaching out to me through the producer of that project later on and said, let's get coffee. And so then we talked about, you know, creative things. I ended up asking her to be part of a reading of a different screenplay that I had written. And so, you know, I knew that I wanted to work with her as well. And so I also asked her then, I was like, would you be in my movie? And she also thankfully said yes. And so then I introduced the two ladies as well. I think I wrote the first draft of the script first. And then I sent them the first draft. I think I introduced them. I made them go grocery shopping together and just pick out things so that we could do a picnic, so to kind of
yeah.
as an icebreaker. And then with the first draft of the script, there were maybe areas where I still wanted to develop different scenes. And I said, you know, let's take this scene and don't let it end where it ends. Also, you can go off script. Let's just explore these characters. And so different things emerged from there as well. And so then I took some of that and I would write the second draft. And so it was a very collaborative process with these actresses.
Sounds good. And did you pick someone to produce it, or did you decide to produce it yourself?
So it was my friend Sharon Park, who I went to USC with as well. We were both in the film production program together. Mm-hmm. And so I asked her to come on as a producer and help produce the film.
Very nice. Yeah. So you started activating all your connections.
Basically. Begging.
Yeah. But that's good. I mean, you've built them over the years and everything, and now yes. You had, you know, an opportunity to actually utilize all these connections, you know, and put them together.
Definitely. And another fun story is, like I said, we didn't have very many resources, and I didn't know how to raise money. I mean, I still am learning. I don't know if I know even now, but one of the ways that we got scrappy was I was like, you know what, let's do a play fundraiser. Mm-hmm. Since I clearly love doing plays, I'd already written the film script, of course, that we wanted to shoot. But right. I was like, I'm going to write a one-act play version of this film script. And so I condensed a version to put on stage. Mm-hmm. And it actually became a rehearsal period for the actors as well. And so we put up a play. And so that ended up becoming a fundraiser that helped us along.
Oh, wow. Very nice. And so the story takes place where? Where's the location?
It takes place in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
All at a house that we were shooting at back then. Mm-hmm. And then actually, it takes place at this one house, actually probably not too far from here, but basically that was right before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And when the pandemic was coming along, or before the pandemic hit, we were wanting to finish the film then, but there were a couple scenes that I knew that we needed to reshoot, and mm-hmm. so we were planning to do that in 2020, but of course the pandemic put everything to a halt.
Yeah.
So we put that aside for a while. We all moved on with our lives for a minute, and then a couple years later, when things started to get safer, I said, okay, we need to finish this, but also it feels a little bit stuck in 2019 when we had shot the original stuff in that day in 2019. And so I, instead of reshooting those couple scenes, I said, I'm going to write new scenes in present day. And so we'll sandwich the film with present day scenes. So we start present day with these two women who haven't seen each other for 3 years in their own lives. And then a few minutes into the film, there comes a moment where they kind of see each other maybe and say, wait, is that? And then we jump back 3 years later and see that day unfold of when they became friends and how it affected the rest of their lives in a certain way.
Yeah. Well, it sounds very interesting. So the film is going to be shown at Lamely NoHo 7, which is in North Hollywood. If you're here in L.A., you should definitely catch the film. It's from November 15th through the 21st.
Yeah.
So that's about a week. And that's pretty cool. How do you get? How did you get them to show your film for a whole week?
And
four showings a day. You said,
yes,
right?
Four showings a day, because it's basically an awards qualifying theatrical run, meaning to qualify for, to even enter the race for the Academy Awards. Ours is obviously a very independent film, but also, you know, you can have the opportunity to do that if you can do a theatrical run that's 7 days, seven consecutive days in certain cities, at least three screenings a day. And so we've been in a few festivals this year, which has been very exciting. And one of the festivals that we were at, afterwards, we could tell that the audience had really responded to this screening. And afterwards, people were coming to tell us how they had felt. And one of those people, he approached us and he said, you know, I loved your film. I was so moved. And I'm also the co-founder of Rotten Tomatoes. And we were like, oh, my God. And he just wanted to connect us with some people that he knew. He wasn't, you know, they sold the company years ago, so that he's not involved with Rotten Tomatoes anymore necessarily. But he wanted to connect us. But then he ended up wanting to also support us and ended up hosting a screening for us in San Francisco again. And then the talk came up among the producers and with him of let's try doing a theatrical run that's mm-hmm. awards qualifying in LA for a week. And so brought on more sponsors and things like that. And so supporters. And so it's become possible in that way as well.
It's amazing. Wow. You think you're gonna be like an Oscar contender? You have to make like a short list, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we will not be able to do that, I'm sure, because it's largely for exposure and to get more people to be able to see the film again,
right?
Because it's, I mean, to qualify for the Oscars, it does take a certain amount of money just to be able to do this theatrical
right.
run. But then there's also the huge campaigns that you have to do and all of that to get it into even more people's screens.
Right.
So I don't
have to compete with a lot of high budget films.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And ours was, you know, comparatively a shoestring. And so I think we just want as many people to be able to see it as possible and hopefully get distribution and be on a platform so that everyone can see it from their own homes as well, maybe have their own screening parties at home,
yeah,
who knows, bring
yeah.
their friends, as it's about friendship.
So is it going to be streamed where people outside of LA can see it?
Not yet, but we're working on it.
Okay.
So right now it's LA only for this next week.
Okay.
So we hope as many people will come out as they can, and then hopefully it'll live
right.
on.
And people can follow and find out if you eventually will stream it. Where can people find out information on the film?
We are on Instagram. It's at meetingyou_meetingme.
Okay.
So please follow along. We put updates about the film there, what's happening, how to see the film now and in the future.
Sounds good. Well, Lena Sue, thank you so much for joining us. We're out of time.
Oh, no.
And I know there's so much to talk about, but you're a fascinating woman. I admire your work and your determination. And, you know, I mean, you've done quite a bit of work in your life, I think, and you still have a lot more to go. But it's a big deal to make a feature film, I know. It's not a small thing. It's not like a short film. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of work. Great
journey.
How long
did it take to make it?
I mean, well, we had the pandemic in between. And
right,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wrote the first draft probably in 2018. We shot Principal in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
We set it aside for 2020 and 21. Mm-hmm. And then we shot the rest in 2022. We finished post in 2023. And now in 2024, here we are.
Well, there you go. So you put in a lot of effort into it. And I'm sure it's going to do very well. I'm going to try and make it actually to see the film.
Please do.
Because now I'm really curious about it.
Yes, please
and,
do.
Yeah, and
wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. So, Lena, thank you again for joining us. I wish you all the best, really.
Thank you. Thank you so, so much.
Of course. And everybody, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.